Wives and Daughters by Elizabeth Gaskell, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, with Catherine Hurlbut, Angela Pleasance, Tom Wilkinson, Anne Louise Lambert, and Thelma Whiteley. Part 8, Scandal and Its Victims.
All the rest of the day following her meeting with Mr. Preston, Molly Gibson was depressed and not well. Having anything to conceal was so unusual, almost so unprecedented a circumstance with her, that it preyed upon her in every way. It was a nightmare that she could not shake off. The next morning's post brought several letters, one from Roger Hamley for Cynthia, and another from the London Kirkpatricks for Mrs. Gibson.
There. I must say I expected that.
Expected what, my dear?
It is a letter from your Uncle Kirkpatrick, Cynthia. So kind, wishing you to go and stay with them and help them to cheer up Helen. Poor Helen. I am afraid she is far from well. But we could not have had her here without disturbing dear Papa in his consulting room. Oh, well. So now they want you to go up directly.
Oh, I shall like going, Mama. All but leaving you, Mama.
Well, can you be ready to go up by the coach tonight? For curiously enough, after more than 20 years' quiet practice at Hollingford, I'm summoned up today for the first time to a consultation in London tomorrow. I'm afraid Lady Cumnor is worse, my dear.
Oh, you don't say so. Poor dear Lady Cumnor, what a shock it is to me. I am so glad I have had some breakfast. I could not have eaten anything. But about your gowns, Cynthia?
Oh, they're all right, Mama, thank you. I shall be quite ready by 4 o'clock.
Molly, will you come with me and help me to pack?
Of course I will.
I wanted to speak to you. It's such a relief to get away from a place haunted by that man, Mr. Preston. But I'm afraid you thought I was glad to leave you.
Oh, indeed, I did not. And I know from my own feelings how you must dislike meeting a man in public in a different manner from what you've done in private. I shall try not to see Mr. Preston again for a long, long time, I'm sure. Oh, but Cynthia, you haven't told me a word out of Roger's letter. Please, how is he? Has he quite got over his attack of fever?
Oh, yes, quite. He writes in very good spirits. A great deal about birds and beasts and things of that kind. But here is the letter. You may read from there. I'll tell you what. I'll trust you with it while I go downstairs, and that shows my sense of your honour. Not but what you might read it all, only you'd find the lovemaking dull. But make a little account of where he is and what he's doing and that sort of thing, and send it off to his father.
Oh, thank you, I will. And today I saw a quagga being driven through the streets in a team with 5 horses. It seems possible that in future these beasts will be very much used domestically. The Okavango swamps.
Oh, Molly, you're more eloquent than you believe yourself. Look here.
But what is it?
Oh, don't you see? These are my very own horrible letters that I'm going to burn directly. Oh. But Mr. Preston has had the grace to send me, thanks to you, little Molly. The letters that have been hanging over my head like somebody's sword for these 2 years.
Oh, I'm so glad. I never thought he would have sent them. He's better than I believed him. And now it's all over. Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, you quite think he means to give up all claim over you by this, don't you, Cynthia?
He may claim, but I won't be claimed. And he has no proof now. It's the most charming relief. And I owe it all to you. Now there's only one more thing left to be done. And if you would but do it for me.
Oh, Cynthia, don't ask me. I cannot do any more. You don't know how sick I go when I think of meeting Mr. Preston yesterday and of Mr. Sheepshank's look when he discovered us.
It's only a very little thing. I won't burden your conscience with telling you how I got my letters, but it's not through a person I can trust with money, and I must force Mr. Preston to take back his £20. Oh, Molly, I should go off with such a light heart if you would only try to get it safely to him. It's the last thing. There would be no immediate hurry, you know. You might meet him by chance, and if you only had it with you in your pocket, there would be nothing so easy.
I do so dislike having these underhand dealings with him.
Underhand? Just simply giving him a letter from me. If I left a note for Miss Browning, should you dislike giving it to her?
Oh, you know that's very different. I could do it openly.
And yet there might be writing in that, and there wouldn't be a line with the money. It would only be the winding up, the honourable, honest winding up of an affair which has worried me for years. Do as you like.
Oh, give it to me. I will try.
Oh, there's a darling. You can but try. And if you can't give it to him in private without getting yourself into a scrape, well,
Keep it till I come back.
He shall have it then, whether he will or not.
Molly looked forward to her 2 days alone with Mrs. Gibson with very different anticipations from those with which she had welcomed the similar intercourse with her father. But Mrs. Gibson really meant to make Molly happy and tried to be an agreeable companion. Only Molly was not well and was uneasy about many apprehended cares and troubles.
You and I must go on the next journey, I think, my dear. We have been stay-at-homes for a long time, and a variety of scene is so desirable for the young. But I think the travellers will be wishing themselves at home by this nice, bright fireside. There's no place like home, as the poet says.
Yes, Mama.
To be sure, it would be very nice for you and me to go on a little journey all by ourselves. You know we live such a restricted kind of life here. I declare, I sometimes get quite sick of the very sight of the chairs and tables that I know so well. And one misses the others, too. It seems so flat and deserted without them.
Yes, we are very forlorn tonight. But I think it is partly owing to the weather.
Nonsense, dear. I can't have you giving in to the silly fancy of being affected by the weather. Poor dear Mr. Kirkpatrick used to say, a cheerful heart makes its own sunshine. He would say it to me whenever I was a little low, for I am a complete barometer. You may really judge the state of the weather by my spirits. I have always been such a sensitive creature. It is well for Cynthia that she does not inherit it. I don't think her easily affected in any way, do you?
No, she is certainly not easily affected. Not deeply affected, perhaps, I should say.
Many girls, for instance, would have been touched by the admiration she excited. I may say the attention she received when she was at her Uncle Kirkpatrick's in London last summer. There was a certain Mr. Henderson. He is studying law, but he has a good private fortune and is likely to have more, so he can only be what I call playing at law. Well, Mr. Henderson is head over heels in love with her. It is not my fancy, although I grant mothers are partial. Both Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick noticed it, and in one of Mrs. Kirkpatrick's letters she said that poor Mr. Henderson was going to Switzerland for a long vacation, doubtless to try and forget Cynthia.
I can't help thinking it was a pity that Cynthia did not tell them of her engagement.
It is not an engagement, my dear. How often must I tell you that?
So what am I to call it?
I don't see why you need to call it anything. Perhaps one may say there is a peculiar relation between dear Cynthia and Roger, but it is very difficult to characterize it. I have no doubt that is the reason she shrinks from speaking about it. You have not heard dear Papa say anything of the old squire or dear Osborne, have you? It seems so long since we have heard or seen anything of Osborne. But he must be quite well, I think, or we should have heard of it.
I believe he is quite well. Someone said the other day that they had met him riding, and that he was looking a great deal stronger.
Indeed, I am truly glad to hear it. I was always fond of Osborne, and do you know, I never really took to Roger. I respected him, and all that, of course. But to compare him with Mr. Henderson. And Mr. Henderson is so handsome and well-bred and gets all his gloves from Oubigon.
It was true that they had not seen anything of Osborne Hamley for a long time, but as it often happens, just after they had been speaking about him, he appeared. It was on the day following Mr. Gibson's departure that Mrs. Gibson received one of the notes, not so common now as formerly, from the Cumnor family in town, asking her to go over to the Towers and find a book or manuscript or something or other that Lady Cumnor wanted with all an invalid's impatience. At 11 o'clock, in all her Sunday best, Mrs. Gibson was off. Shortly afterwards, Mr. Osborne Hamley was announced.
This is not a call on you, Molly. I was in hopes I may have found your father at home.
I hope you did not want to see him professionally.
Yes, I did. When will he be back?
He was summoned up to London. Lady Cumnor is worse. I fancy there is some operation going on, but I don't know. He will be back tomorrow night.
Very well, then. I must wait until then. Perhaps I should be better by that time. I think it's half fancy, but I should like your father to tell me so. He will laugh at me, I dare say. He always is severe on fanciful patients, isn't he?
Papa enjoys a joke at everything, you know. It is a relief after all the sorrow he sees.
Very true. There is a great deal of sorrow in the world. But tell me, what of Cynthia and Mrs. Gibson?
Cynthia is also in London, and Mama has gone up to the Towers.
I think I should like to have seen Cynthia again. Poor Roger. He loves her very dearly, Molly.
Mama and I were speaking of you only yesterday, and she said how long it was since we'd seen you.
I think I've grown careless. I've often felt so weary and ill that it was all I could do to keep up a brave face before my father.
Why did you not come and see Papa?
I cannot tell. I drifted on, sometimes better and sometimes worse. Till today, when I mustered up pluck to come and see him, and all for no use, it seems.
Oh, I'm very sorry. He shall go and see you as soon as ever he returns.
He must not alarm my father, remember, Molly. God, Roger was at home.
I cannot help understanding you. You think yourself very ill. But isn't it that you were tired just now?
Well, sometimes I do think I'm very ill. And then again, I think it's only this moping life sets me fancying and exaggerating. You see, there are others depending upon me, upon my health. You haven't forgotten what you heard that day in the library at home. No, I know you haven't. I've seen the thought of it in your eyes often since then. I didn't know you at that time, but I think I do know you.
Please don't go on talking so fast. Rest. No one will interrupt us.
The name of my wife is Amy. Amy Hamley, of course. She lives at Bishopsfield, a village near Winchester. Here, I've written it down, but keep it to yourself. She is a Frenchwoman, a Roman Catholic, and was a servant. She is a thoroughly good woman. I must not say how dear she is to me. I dare not. I meant once to have told Cynthia, but she didn't seem quite to consider me as a brother. It is a relief to think that someone else has my secret, and you are like one of us, Molly. I can trust you, almost as I can trust Roger. I feel better already now. I feel that someone else knows the whereabouts of my wife and child.
Child? Oh, yes. Miss Phoebe Brown.
Fold up that paper quickly. It is only for yourself.
My dear Molly, why didn't you come and dine with us? I said to Sister I would come and scold you. Oh, Mr. Osborne Hamley, is that you? Well, well. We have only just heard of Mrs. Gibson's having a fly from the dog because Sister sent our Betty to pay for a couple of rabbits Tom Osler had snared. Oh, I hope we shan't be taken up for poachers. Anyway, she heard that he was gone off with the fly to the Towers with your dear mamma. So I said, why, there's that poor dear girl left all alone by herself. But I'm sure I'm glad I'm mistaken.
I came to speak to Mr. Gibson, not knowing he had gone to London. Miss Gibson has been very kind to me, but I must go now.
Oh, dear. I am sorry. I've disturbed you. But it was with the best intentions.
Of course. Well, if you will excuse me, Miss Gibson, Miss Browning.
I will tell my father of your visit, Mr. Hamley.
Thank you. Ladies?
Oh, such a nice, suitable thing, and I came in the midst and spoilt it all. I'm sure you're very kind, my dear, considering...
Considering what, dear Miss Phoebe? If you are conjecturing a love affair between Mr. Osborne Hamley and me, you were never more mistaken in your life. Oh. I think I told you so once before. Please do believe me.
Oh, yes, sir, I remember. And somehow Sister got it into her head. Now, it was Mr. Preston, I recollect.
One guess is just as wrong as the other.
Oh. Well, now, my dear, I'm just off to Grinstead, the bookseller. And I wondered if you would care to accompany me.
Oh. Why, yes, of course, Miss Phoebe. I'll just get my bonnet and cloak.
Molly went upstairs to get ready to accompany Miss Phoebe, and on opening one of her drawers, she saw Cynthia's envelope containing the note she owed to Mr. Preston, carefully sealed up like a letter. Molly took it up, hating it, and put it in her pocket.
And such a pretty, pretty binding. I always say that you can tell exactly what... Oh, it's Mr. Preston.
Ah, good afternoon, Mr. Preston. Good afternoon. You've called about the account books in order, no doubt.
Indeed.
If you'll just wait for one moment, I shall see.
Thank you. Good day, Miss Browning. Miss Gibson.
Good day. Well, now, that's everything, I think. Yes, Sisters Book Society subscription, writing paper. Well, my dear, I think we'll go across to Johnson's now.
Oh, yes. Oh, Johnson's, yes.
Whatever is the
matter. I'm sorry, I was dreaming. Yes, by all means, let us cross to Johnson's.
And you must remind me to purchase some tea.
It is.
Oh, and ribbon. Blue ribbon. Tell me, how is dear Lady Harriet? I often meant
I'll
to
be
ask
back that. Directly.
Well, I...
Why,
please, Miss Gibson, quickly.
Can I help you, madam?
No, thank you. I'm just leaving.
I have been waiting some little time, Mr. Grinstead.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Goodenough.
Scandal sleeps in the summer, comparatively speaking. Its nature is the reverse of that of the dormouse. Warm ambient air, loiterings abroad, gardenings, flowers to talk about and preserves to make, soothed the wicked imp to slumber in their parish of Hollingford in summertime. But when the evenings grew short and people gathered round the fires, then was the time for confidential conversation.
I could tell of one girl at least who's on the high road to matrimony, and in such a cunning way as ever I heard on, going out at dusk to meet her sweetheart, just as if she was a servant. Not that she's picked anybody common. Oh, no. She's looked about her for a handsome fellow and a smart young man enough.
I suppose you mean Mr. Preston and Miss Gibson, Mrs. Goodenough.
Why, who ever told you that, Betty Croston? You can't say as I did.
My Uncle Sheepshanks came upon them in the Park Avenue. He startled them a good deal, he said. And when he teased Mr. Preston with being her sweetheart, he didn't deny it.
Well, to be sure, Mrs. Dawes. And Molly Gibson, of all people.
You may well say Molly Gibson, of all people, Betty. Oh, I blame that stepmother of hers with her airs and graces.
Oh, she seemed to me very affable. Though she is so intimate with the Countess. And she's quite the lady herself. Dines late and everything in style.
Style? Very different style to what Bob Gibson, her husband, was used to when he first came here, I can tell you. Why, he was glad of a mutton chop in his surgery then.
Really?
But you knew about it already, you say, Betty.
Well, now that so much has come out, I'll tell you what I know.
Mrs. Croston told me in the strictest confidence, of course.
Of course.
Well, he ran out of the wood just beyond Hannah Pearson's cottage and says he, a cup of water, please, good woman, for a lady has fainted.
Goodness.
And Mrs. Croston says he didn't know Hannah, but Hannah knew him.
Ah, more folk know Tom Fool than Tom Fool knows.
But I didn't think Molly Gibson was that sort. Really, I didn't.
And the Gibsons hold themselves so high, too.
Well, I think it looks very bad for Molly Gibson. Very bad.
And that's not all. For my Uncle Sheepshanks came upon them in the Park Avenue. He startled them a good deal, he said.
Really?
And Mrs. Goodenough says it's a scandal.
And so it is. A scandal.
When Mr. Gibson returned to Hollingford, he found an accumulation of business waiting for him. He had hardly time to speak to his family. He had so immediately to rush off to pressing cases of illness. But Molly managed to arrest him in the hall to inform him of Osborne Hamley's visit. And Mr. Gibson resolved to visit Hamley Hall as soon as his other patients allowed. Meanwhile, the buzzing gossip about Molly's meetings with Mr. Preston had been gathering strength and assuming the positive form of scandal. The simple, innocent girl who walked through the quiet streets without a thought of being the object of mysterious implications became for a time the unconscious black sheep of the town.
Phoebe, either you've got some reason for puffing yourself out with sighs, or you've not. If you have a reason, it's your duty to tell it me directly. And if you haven't a reason, you must break yourself of a bad habit that is growing upon you.
Oh, sister, do you think it is really my duty to tell you? It would be such a comfort. But then I thought I ought not. It will distress you so, and you've such a temper,
Sally. Nonsense. I'm well prepared for misfortune by the frequent contemplation of its possibility, and I believe I can receive any ill news with apparent equanimity and real resignation. Now, what is it?
Oh, I hardly know how to tell you.
Cry as much as you like when you've told me, but don't cry now when you're keeping me on tenterhooks.
Molly Gibson has lost her character, sister. That's it.
Molly Gibson has done no such thing. How dare you repeat stories about Mary's child? Now, never let me hear you say such things again.
I can't help it. Mrs. Dawes told me, and she says it's all over the town. I told her I did not believe a word of it, and I kept it from you. Oh, sister, what are you going to do?
Do? I'm going to put on my bonnet, and then I shall call upon Mrs. Dawes and confront her with her lies.
Oh, don't call them lies. It's such a strong, ugly word. Please, call them tally-diddles. I don't believe she meant any harm. Besides, so many things sounded as if they might be true.
What things?
Why, one story was that Molly had given him a letter in the bookshop.
Who's him?
Him is Mr. Preston.
What else did you hear from Mrs. Dawes?
Why, that Molly and Mr. Preston were keeping company just as if she was a maidservant and he a gardener, meeting at all sorts of improper times and places, and now the whole town is talking about it and crying shame and saying that they ought to be married.
Oh, Phoebe, if I ever hear you say such things again, I'll turn you out of the house. Now, what I've got to decide is how to put a stop to all these lies.
They're not all lies, if you will call them so. I'm afraid some things are true. There were Stockton and being false when Mrs. Dawes told me of them.
If I go to Mrs. Dawes and she repeats them to me, I shall slap her face and box her ears as well, I'm afraid.
Oh, sister.
I couldn't stand tales being told about poor Molly Gibson as if they were just a stirring piece of news like James Horrocks' pig with two heads. If I speak to Molly, the child will deny it if she's half as good for nothing as they say. If she's not, she'll only worry herself to death. I could see Mrs. Goodenough. No, she's a donkey. No, Mrs. Dawes, who told you, shall tell me.
Oh,
and I'll tie my hands together inside my muff. And when I've heard what is to be heard, I'll put the matter into Mr. Gibson's hands. Yes, that's what I'll do.
I came as quickly as I could when I got your note. It's Phoebe again, I suppose.
Mr. Gibson, I wish it was Phoebe. Or me, either. It's your Molly.
Molly?
I'm so grieved about it. Well, it's out now, God help us both, and the poor child too, for I'm sure she's been led astray.
Molly?
They say... Oh, how shall I tell you?
Go on, can't you? What do they say? I'm not going to believe it, so don't be afraid.
But I fear you must believe it. I would not if I could help it. She's been carrying on a clandestine correspondence with Mr. Preston.
Mr. Preston?
And meeting him at all sorts of unseemly places and hours, out of doors, in the dark. All the town is talking of it. Mr. Sheepshank saw them together. They exchanged notes in Grinstead's
shop. Be quiet, can't you? I've had enough. Now, don't go on. I said I shouldn't believe you, and I don't. Well, I suppose I must thank you for telling me, but I can't yet.
I don't want your thanks. I thought you ought to know. For though you're married again, I can't forget you were dear Mary's husband once upon a time, and Molly's her child.
I'd rather not speak about it any more just now. I may not control myself as I ought. I only wish I could meet Mr. Preston and horsewhip him within an inch of his life. I wish I had the doctoring of these slanderous gossips. I'd make their tongues lie still for a while. My little girl, what harm has she ever done them all that they should go and foul her fair name?
Indeed, Mr. Gibson, I'm afraid it's all true. I would not have sent for you if I hadn't examined into it. Do ascertain the truth before you do anything violent, such as horsewhipping or poisoning.
What have I said about horsewhipping or poisoning? I shall go home and ask Molly herself what's the meaning of it all. That's all I shall do. I mean, it's too ridiculous. Knowing Molly as I do, it's perfectly ridiculous. Really, what will they say next? Satan finds mischief still for idle tongues to do.
Don't talk of Satan, please, in this house. No one knows what may happen if he's lightly spoken about.
I have a good mind to leave the place. And what food for scandal that piece of folly would give rise to. I'm thoroughly ungrateful to you for as true a mark of friendship as you've ever shown me. True or false, it was right I should know the wretched scandal that's being circulated. And it couldn't have been pleasant for you to have to tell me. Thank you.
Indeed, Mr. Gibson. If it was false, I would never have named it, but let it die away.
It's not true, though.
I shall always love Molly for her mother's sake.
You ought to love her for her own. She's done nothing to disgrace herself. I shall go straight home and probe into the truth. Good night, and thank you again.
Good night, Mr. Gibson.
Papa, you wanted me. Mariah said...
Hush, shut the door. And come here.
You saw Osborne today, Papa. Is it about him?
No. Molly, what is this I hear? That you've been keeping up a clandestine affair with Mr. Preston, meeting him in out-of-the-way places and exchanging letters with him in a stealthy way. Well, answer the question. Have you met that man in private?
Yes, Papa, I have, but I don't think it was very wrong.
Wrong? Not very wrong. Well, I must bear it somehow. Your mother's dead, that's one comfort. So it's true. Why, I didn't believe it, and I've been a dupe all the time.
Oh, I cannot tell you all. It is not my secret, or you should know it directly.
Well, I've never deceived you yet, have I? Why have I ever deceived you?
How can I tell? I hear of this from the town's talk. I don't know what next may come out.
The town's talk? What business is it of theirs?
Everyone makes it their business to cast dirt on a girl's name who has disregarded the commonest rules of modesty and propriety.
Ah, you are very hard. I met Mr. Preston once, that evening when he put me down to walk over the heath. And there was another person with him. I met him a second time, and that time was by appointment. Nobody but our two selves in the Towers Park. And that is all, Papa. You must trust me. I cannot explain more.
And the letters?
I gave him one letter, of which I did not write a word, which, in fact, I believe to have been merely an envelope without any writing whatsoever inside. Oh, Papa, what have they been saying that has shocked you so much?
Never mind. Now, you say you are not acting for yourself, but for another. Now, if you tell me who that other was, I will do my best to screen her, for, of course, I guess it was Cynthia, while I'm exonerating you.
No, Papa, I've told you all that I can tell, all that concerns myself, and I have promised not to say one word more.
Then your character will be impugned. It must be, unless the fullest explanation of these secret meetings is given. I have a great mind to force the whole truth out of Preston himself.
Papa, once again, I beg you to trust me. If you ask Mr. Preston, you will very likely hear the whole truth. But that is just what I've been trying so hard to conceal. For it will only make several people very unhappy if it is known. And besides, the whole affair is over and done with now.
Not your share of it. Miss Browning sent for me this evening to tell me how people were talking about you. She implied that it was a complete loss of your good name. You don't know, Molly, how slight a thing may blacken a girl's reputation for life. I'd hard work to stand all she said, even though I didn't believe a word of it at the time. And now you've told me that much of it is true.
But I think you were a brave man, Papa. And you believe me, don't you? We shall outlive these rumors, never fear.
You don't know the power of ill-natured tongues, child.
Oh, now that you've called me child again, I don't care for anything. Dear Papa, I'm sure it is best and wisest to take no notice of these speeches. After all, they may not mean them ill-naturedly. I am sure Miss Browning would not. By and by, they'll forget how much they made out of so little. And even if they don't, you would not have me break my solemn word, would you?
Perhaps not. But I cannot easily forgive the person who, by practicing on your generosity, led you into this scrape. You're very young, and look upon things as merely temporary evils. I have more experience.
Still, I don't see what I can do now, Papa. Perhaps I've been foolish. But what I did of my own self. It was not suggested to me. I'm sure it was not wrong in morals, whatever it might be in judgment. And as I said, it's all over now.
Does Mrs. Gibson know anything about it?
No, not a bit. And pray don't name it to her. That might lead to more mischief than anything else. I have really told you everything I am at liberty to tell.
Then what is to be done? These reports are abroad. Am I to do nothing to contradict them?
I'm afraid so. I'm very sorry, for I never meant for you to have known anything about it. I can see now how it must distress you. But surely when nothing more happens, the gossip must die away. I know you believe every word I have said and that you trust me. Please, for my sake, be patient with all this gossip and cackle.
It will try me hard, Molly. But I don't see what else I can do unless I get hold of Preston.
That would be worst of all. And after all, perhaps he was not so much to blame. Yes, he was. But he behaved well to me as far as that goes.
Oh, it's all a mystery. I hate to have you mixed up in mysteries.
I hate to be mixed up. But what can I do? I know of another mystery which I am pledged not to speak about. I cannot help myself.
Well, then, I suppose I must yield to your wishes and let this scandal wear itself out.
What else can you do under the circumstances?
Ah, what else indeed? How shall you bear it?
It's like tooth drawing. It will be over sometime. It would be much worse if I had really been doing wrong.
Cynthia
must not be accused or suspected. You will drive her out of your house if you do. Well, she is so proud and so unprotected, except by you and Roger. And for Roger's sake, you will never do or say anything to send Cynthia away when he has trusted all of us to take care of her. Oh, and she really is good at heart. Really, you must not vex or hurt Cynthia, Papa. Remember, she is dependent upon you.
I think the world would get on tolerably well if there were no women in it. They plague the life out of one.
You are not angry with me now, Papa, are you?
Oh, get out of my way. If I'm not angry with you, I ought to be. For you've caused a great deal of worry, which won't be over yet a while, I can tell you. Now, run along, Goosey.
Oh, Papa.
For all Molly's bravery at the time of this conversation, it was she that suffered more than her father. He kept out of the way of hearing gossip, but she was perpetually thrown into the small society of the place. Lady Cumnor had so far recovered from the violence of her illness and from the subsequent operation as to be able to be moved to Cumnor Towers for a change of air, and accordingly she was brought thither by her whole family, with all the pomp and state becoming an invalid peeress.
Ah, I beg your pardon, my lady. I'm later than I should have been, I know. Why, haven't you had your tea yet? Let me in. No, Harriet, stay there. Cream, my dear.
You know I never take cream before I've sweetened it, my lord.
Oh, dear, what a simpleton I am. I think I might have remembered it by this time. You see, I met old Sheepshanks while I was out walking, and that's the reason of it.
Of your handing me the cream before the sugar?
No. You're better this evening, I think, my dear. But as I was saying, Sheepshanks is such an eternal talker. There's no getting away from him, and I had no idea it was so late.
Well, I think the least you can do is to tell us something of Mr. Sheepshanks' conversation, now that you've torn yourself away from him.
Well, he was telling me something about Preston. Old Sheepshanks thinks he'll be married before long. He says there's a great deal of gossip going on about him and Gibson's daughter.
Oh.
As they've been caught meeting in the park and corresponding, and all that kind of thing that is likely to end in a marriage.
I shall be very sorry. I always liked that girl, and I can't bear Mr. Preston.
I dare say it's not true.
Ah, but this did sound like truth. Sheepshanks said all the old ladies in the town had got hold of it and were making a great scandal out of it.
I don't think it sounds quite a nice story. I wonder what Claire could be doing to allow such goings on.
I think it's much more likely that Claire's own daughter, that pretty, porky Miss Kirkpatrick, is the real heroine of this story. Little Molly Gibson has a certain gaucherie about her which would disqualify her at once from any clandestine proceedings. Besides clandestine, why, the child is truth itself. Papa, are you sure Mr. Sheepshanks said that it was Miss Gibson that was exciting Hollingford's scandal? Wasn't it Miss Kirkpatrick?
Mm-hmm.
The notion of her and Mr. Preston making a match of it doesn't sound so incongruous, but if it's my little friend Molly, I'll go to church and forbid the banns.
Really, Harriet? I can't think what always makes you take such an interest in all those petty Hollingford affairs.
Mama, it's only tit for tat. They take the most lively interest in all our sayings and doings. If I were going to be married, they would want to know every possible particular. So it's only a proper return of the compliment to want to know on our side how they are going on. I'm quite a papa's faction. I like to hear all the local gossip.
Well, especially when it is flavoured with a piece of scandal and impropriety, as in this case.
Oh.
I am really interested in this story about Molly Gibson. I own I both like and respect her, and I do not like to hear her name coupled with that of Mr. Preston. I can't help fancying Papa has made some mistake.
Well, no, my dear. I'm sure I'm repeating what I heard. I'm sorry I said anything about it, if it annoys you or my lady. Sheepshanks did say Miss Gibson, and he went on to say it was a pity the gal had got herself so talked about it.
I warned her against him on the day of her father's wedding, and what a straightforward, outspoken topic it was then. I don't believe it. It's only one of old Sheepshanks' stories, half invention and half deafness. Do you know, I think it is high time I took tea again with the Miss Brownings.
More tea, Lady Harriet. It is your own special blend.
Thank you, no. But tell me, for I must settle my curiosity, what is all this I hear about my little friend Molly Gibson and Mr. Preston?
Oh, Lady Harriet, have you heard of it? We are so sorry.
Sorry for what?
I think, begging your ladyship's pardon, we'd better not say any more till we know how much you know.
No. I shan't tell you what I know till I'm sure you know more. Then we'll make an exchange, if you like.
I'm afraid it's no laughing matter for poor Molly. People do say such things.
But I don't believe them.
No more will I, then.
It's all very fine, Phoebe, saying you don't believe them, but I should like to know who it was that convinced me, sadly against my will, I'm sure. But how does your ladyship explain away her meetings with Mr. Preston?
I went so far as to send for her father and tell him all about it. I thought at least he would have horsewhipped Mr. Preston, but he seems to have taken no notice of it.
Then we may be quite sure he knows some way of explaining matters that we don't. After all, there may be 100 perfectly natural and justifiable explanations. I choose to have faith in Molly.
And so do I.
I'm sure she's not done anything very wrong. I have a great mind to go and call on the Gibsons.
Oh, I hear Mrs. Gibson is confined to her bed with influenza.
All the better. I'll call upon Molly and take her with me on a round of calls through this gossiping little town. But I've no time today. Only remember, Miss Phoebe, it's you and I against the world in defence of a distressed damsel.
Oh.
And now, ladies, I must bid you good afternoon, for I have to meet Papa at 3.
Oh, well, let me see you.
No, don't bother. I know my way.
Well, now, I don't think that's pretty of you, Phoebe.
What?
First you convince me against my will and make me very unhappy, and I have to do unpleasant things, all because you've made me believe that certain statements are true. And then you turn round and say you don't believe a word of it, making me out a regular ogre and backbiter.
Oh, but Sally...
It's no use. I shan't listen to you.
I am so sorry I kept you, Papa. I was gossiping with a Miss Browning.
No harm done, my dear. Ah, here's Preston, looking very grand, too. Quite makes me feel ashamed of my threadbare old coat.
Nonsense, Papa.
Good day to you, Preston. I was just wanting to ask you about that slip of pasture land on the home farm.
Well, good day, my lord, Lady Harriet. Home farm, yes. John Brickhill wants to plough it up and crop it. Well, it's not 2 acres at best, my lord, so it will need careful thinking about.
Mr. Preston, perhaps you will allow me to ask you one or two questions to relieve my mind, for I am in some little perplexity at present.
Certainly, my lady. Is it about the home farm?
No. There are reports about Miss Gibson and you current among the gossips of Hollingford. Are we to congratulate you on your engagement to that lady?
Of course, we ought to have done it before.
Mr. Preston has not yet told us if the reports are well-founded, Papa.
Alas, I am not so fortunate, my lady.
Then may I contradict that report? Or is there any reason for believing that in time it may come true? I ask because such reports, if unfounded, do harm to young ladies.
Keep other sweethearts off, eh?
And I take a great interest in Miss Gibson.
I have no expectation or hope of ever having a nearer interest in Miss Gibson than I have at present. I shall be glad if this straightforward answer relieves your ladyship from your perplexity.
Then, sir, are you aware of the injury you may do to a young lady's reputation if you meet her and detain her in long conversations when she's walking by herself? You give rise, you have given rise, to reports.
My dear Harriet, are you not going too far? You don't know. Mr. Preston may have intentions, acknowledged intentions.
No, my lord, I have no intentions with regard to Miss Gibson. She may be a very worthy young lady. I have no doubt she is. Lady Harriet seems determined to push me into such a position that I cannot but acknowledge myself to be... It is not pleasant to own. But I am, in fact, a jilted man, jilted by Miss Kirkpatrick after a tolerably long engagement. My interviews with Miss Gibson were not of the most agreeable kind, as you may conclude when I tell you she was, I believe, the instigator... Certainly she was the agent in this last step of Miss Kirkpatrick's. Is your ladyship's curiosity satisfied with this rather mortifying confession of mine?
Harriet, my dear, you've gone too far. We had no right to pry into Mr. Preston's private affairs.
No more I had. But he will excuse me, I hope, when he learns that the busy tongues of the Hollingford ladies have been speaking of my friend Miss Gibson in the most unwarrantable manner, drawing unjustifiable inferences from the fact of her meetings with Mr. Preston, the nature of which he has just conferred such a real obligation to me by explaining.
I think I need hardly request Lady Harriet to consider this explanation of mine as confidential.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Everyone will understand that.
And Lord Cumnor rode home and told his wife and Lady Cuxhaven the whole conversation between Mr. Preston and Lady Harriet, in the strictest confidence, of course. Lady Harriet had to stand a good many strictures on manners and proper dignity for a few days after this. However, she consoled herself by calling upon the Gibsons and carrying off the unconscious Molly for a walk, which Lady Harriet so continued that they twice passed through all the length of the principal street of the town, loitered at Grinstead's for half an hour, and wound up by Lady Harriet's calling on the Miss Brownings, who, to her regret, were not at home.
Not at home?
No, they're not often out.
Perhaps it's as well. I'll leave my card and put your name underneath.
Please, Lady Harriet, I never leave cards. I haven't got any. And on the Miss Brownings of all people, why, I'm in and out whenever I like.
Never mind, little one. Today you should do everything properly and according to full etiquette. Oh, and tell Mrs. Gibson to come out to the Towers for a long day. We will send the carriage for her as soon as she is strong enough to come.
Yes.
Indeed, she'd better come over for a few days. And now, goodbye. We've done a good day's work, and better than you're aware of.
Goodbye, Lady Harriet. And thank you. I will tell Mama.
Hollingford is not the place I take it to be if it doesn't veer round in Miss Gibson's favour after my today's trotting of that child about.
Mrs. Gibson was slow in recovering her strength after the influenza, and before she was well enough to accept Lady Harriet's invitation to the Towers, Cynthia came home from London. Cynthia's whole manner was more quiet than it had been when the weight of her unpleasant secret had rested on her mind and made her alternately despondent or flighty. Molly was quite puzzled to account for it, until at last the mystery burst its shell.
"I've had a letter from Aunt Kirkpatrick, Cynthia. She sends me my dividends. Your uncle is so busy. What does she mean by this?"
"It means, Mama, I may as well tell you at once, that Mr. Henderson offered to me while I was in London, and I refused him."
"Refused him? You never told me. Really, Cynthia, I think you are very unkind. And pray, what made you refuse Mr. Henderson? Such a gentleman, with a private fortune, too."
"Mama, do you forget that I have promised to marry Roger Hamley?"
"No, of course. I don't know how I can, with Molly always dinning the word engagement into my ears."
"Oh, but, Mama, it's
but not... really, when one considers all the uncertainties, and after all, it was not a distinct promise, he seemed almost as if he might have looked forward to something of this sort."
"Of what sort?"
"Why, a more eligible offer. He must have known you might change your mind and meet with someone you like better."
"I never said I liked him better. How can you talk so? I'm going to marry Roger, and there's an end of it. I will not be spoken to about it again."
"Going to marry Roger? That's all very fine, but who is to guarantee he's coming back alive? And if he does, what have they to marry upon? I don't wish her to have accepted Mr. Henderson, though I am sure she liked him. But she need not have quite finally refused him until we see how matters turn out. Such an invalid as I am, too, it has quite given me a palpitation of the heart."
In a little while, Mrs. Gibson was able to accept Lady Harriet's often repeated invitation to go and stay at Cumnor Towers for a day or two. But alas, and perhaps due to Lady Cumnor's convalescent irritability, the visit was not, on the whole, quite so happy a one as she had anticipated.
"Oh, Claire, how often must I tell you I had no thought of you or your gowns, or whether they cost much or little. Your husband has to pay for them, and..."
"Oh, what's the matter, dear Mama? Are you not tiring yourself with talking?"
"No, not at all. I was only speaking of the folly of people who dress above their stations. And what must that foolish woman do but begin to justify her own dress?"
"It was only 5 guineas for the whole dress."
"And very pretty it is, too."
"You ought to know me better by this time, Claire. When I say a thing, I say it out. I don't beat about the bush. I will tell you where I think you've been at fault, Claire, if you like to know. You have spoilt that gal of yours till she does not know her own mind. She has behaved abominably to Mr. Preston. You have much to answer for."
"Cynthia, Mr. Preston,
Mr. Preston did not wish it spoken about."
"As for Mr. Preston's wishes, I do not suppose I am bound to regard them when I feel it my duty to reprove error. And, Claire, do you mean to say that you are not aware that your daughter has been engaged to Mr. Preston for some time, and has at last chosen to break it off? And has used the Gibson gal as a cat's paw, and made her the butt for all the gossip of Hollingford. I remember when I was young, there was a gal called Jilting Jessie." "I speak to you like a friend, Claire, when I tell you it's my opinion that gal of yours will get herself into some more mischief yet before she's safely married. I know what is becoming in a young woman, and jilting is not. And now you may both go away and send Dawson to me, for I'm tired and I want to have a little sleep."
"Indeed,
Lady Cumnor, will you believe me? I do not think Cynthia was ever engaged to Mr. Preston. There was an old flirtation. I was afraid...
Ring the bell for Dawson Harriet.
Why, Mama, how are you? We didn't expect you so soon.
It has not been such a happy visit that I should wish to prolong it.
Why, what has been the matter?
The matter? You, Cynthia, you... I little thought when you were born how I should have to bear to hear you so spoken about at the Towers.
What business have they with me at the Towers? How came they to talk about me in any way?
Well, everybody is talking about your flirting and jilting.
Would you mind telling me what they said?
Oh, it is you, Mama.
I'm back so soon. Molly, Mama has come back from the Towers where they have been doing me the honour to talk over my crimes and misdemeanours. And I am asking Mama what they said. I don't set up for more virtue than other people, but I can't make out what an earl and a countess had to do with poor little me.
It was not for your sake. It was for mine. They felt for me. For it is not pleasant to have one's child's name in everybody's mouth. They say you've gone and engaged yourself to Preston, and now you refuse to marry him. And they call that jilting.
Do you wish me to marry him, Mama?
No, of course I don't. You've gone and entangled yourself with Roger Hamley, and nobody knows if he's dead or alive. And he has not a penny, if he is alive.
I beg your pardon. I know he has some fortune from his mother, and he's sure to earn fame and great reputation. And with it, money will come.
But you've entangled yourself with him, and you've done something of the sort with Mr. Preston, and got yourself into such an imbroglio that when a really eligible person comes forward, a handsome gentleman and a private fortune into the bargain, you refuse him. You'll end up as an old maid, Cynthia, and it will break my heart.
I dare say I shall. I sometimes think I'm the kind of person of which old maids are made.
I don't want to know your secrets, as long as they are secrets. But when the whole town is talking about you, I think I ought to be told.
But, Mama, I didn't know I was the subject of conversation.
No more did I. I only know that now they say you've been engaged to Mr. Preston and ought to have married him, and that I can't help it any more than I could have helped your refusing Mr. Henderson. And yet I am constantly blamed for your misconduct.
You're here, my dear. Welcome back. Why, what's the matter? Tears?
Yes, I am come home again, and I'm telling Cynthia how Lady Cumnor has been so cross with me and all through her. Did you know that she had gone and engaged herself to Mr. Preston and then broken it off? Everybody's talking about it, and they know it up at the Towers.
Cynthia, is this true? I have heard something of it before, not much, but there is scandal enough about it to make it desirable that you should have some protector, some friend who knows the whole truth. Well?
Molly knows it all.
Yes, I know that Molly knows it all, and that she's had to bear slander and ill words for your sake, Cynthia. But she refused to tell me more.
She told you that much, did she?
I could not help it.
She did not name your name. At the time, I believe she thought she'd concealed it. But there was no mistaking who it was.
Why did she speak about it at all?
It was necessary for her to justify herself to me. I had my daughter's reputation attacked for the private meetings she had given to Mr. Preston. I came to her for an explanation. Now, there's no need to be ungenerous, Cynthia, because you've been a flirt and a jilt. Even to the degree of dragging Molly's name down into the same mire.
You say that of me, Mr. Gibson, not knowing what the circumstances are. You say that.
Yes, I do say it. I do say that Molly has had a great deal to bear in consequence of this clandestine engagement of yours, Cynthia. There may be extenuating circumstances, I acknowledge, but you will need to remember them all to excuse your conduct to Roger Hamley when he comes home. I ask you to tell me the full truth, in order that until he comes and has a legal right to protect you, I may do so. You do not reply. Well, it certainly requires explanation. Here you are, engaged to two men at once, to all appearances. To be sure, the gossips of the town haven't picked out the fact of Roger Hamley being your accepted lover. But scandal has been resting on Molly and ought to have rested on you, Cynthia.
Papa, if you knew all, you wouldn't speak so to Cynthia.
I am ready to hear whatever she has to say.
No. You have prejudged me. You have spoken to me as you have no right to speak. I refuse to give you my confidence or accept your help. People are very cruel to me. I did not think you would have been. But I can bear it.
Oh, Papa, do let me tell you all.
I think, Mr. Gibson, you have been very unkind to my poor fatherless child. I only wish her poor father had been alive, and all this would never have happened.
Very probably. Still, I cannot see what either she or you have to complain of. Inasmuch as we could, I and mine have sheltered her. I have loved her. I do love her, almost as if she were my own child. as well as Molly, I do not pretend to do.
That is it, Mr. Gibson. You do not treat her like your own child.
Oh, excuse me.
Cynthia, it's me. Open the door. I have something to say to you.
No, I'm busy. Leave me alone. I don't want to hear what you've got to say. I don't want to see you.
Oh, Cynthia, please.
Go away. I cannot bear the feeling of your being there, waiting and listening. Go downstairs. Or out of the house, anywhere. It's the most you can do for me now.
Oh, Cynthia.
Molly crept away as she was bidden, and walked till she came to a field where she had sought the comfort of loneliness ever since she was a child. And there, under the hedge bank, she sat down and buried her face in her hands. She never knew how long she sat there, but it was long past lunchtime when she returned home, where she found Cynthia and Mrs. Gibson sitting together in the drawing-room.
Mama? Molly? I wish you both to know that henceforward all is at an end between me and Roger Hamley.
Cynthia, you can't mean
it. I could have understood this if it had happened when you were in London. But now it is just nonsense, Cynthia. And you know you don't mean
it. Cynthia, think of him. It will break his heart.
No, it will not. But even if it did, I cannot help it.
All this gossip will soon pass away, and when he knows the truth...
You shall never hear it from me. I do not love him well enough to go through the shame of having to excuse myself to plead that he will reinstate me in his good opinion. All I know is, and I know it clearly, and will act upon it inflexibly, that I think you might finish your sentence. I cannot bear to exculpate myself to Roger Hamley. I will not submit to his thinking less well of me than he has done. I would rather never see him again, and the truth is, I do not love him. I like him and respect him, but I will not marry him. I have written to tell him so. And I have written to Squire Hamley also. The relief is the one good thing to come out of it all.
Oh, Cynthia, only think what you are doing.
Come in.
Isn't the master here, madam?
He went out not 5 minutes ago.
Oh, dear. There's a man come on horseback from Hamley Hall. He wants the master to go off right away.
Why, what is the matter?
He says that Mr. Osborne is dead.
Osborne Hamley?
Father will not be long away, or he would have left word where he was going. Mariah, go and tell James to put the side saddle on Nora Craner. I shall ride over to Hamley immediately. I cannot bear to think of Squire Hamley alone. When Papa comes back, he is sure to go to Hamley.
Molly!
And if I am not wanted, I can come back with him. Oh, hurry, Mariah, hurry!
In part 8 of Elizabeth Gaskell's Wives and Daughters, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, the part of Molly was played by Catherine Herbert, Claire, Angela Pleasance, Mr. Gibson, Tom Wilkinson, Cynthia, and Louise Lambert, Osborne, Adam Barham, Mr. Preston, Brett Usher, Lady Harriet, Marion Diamond, Lady Cumnor, Pauline Letts, Lord Cumnor, Carrie Francis, Miss Browning, Diana Bishop, Miss Phoebe, Hilda Schroeder, Mrs. Goodenough, Margot Boyd, with James Bryce, Monica Gray, Maggie McCarthy, Maddie Head, and Eileen Tully. And Thelma Whiteley was Mrs. Gaskell. The music was composed by Rachel Portman, and the director was Jane Morgan.